everyone, and welcome to episode 49 of the Classic Leap podcast. My name is Tony, and I'm half of the Classic Leap team, and we strive to bring you the best we can from the gaming and consumer electronic fields. And when I say gaming, I mean all things retro and modern. Now, we are 1 week before episode 50, and Scott and I are very excited for episode 50. We have some interviews lined up, some giveaways, and we just have a lot of things that I think everyone is really going to enjoy, so make sure you tune in. Now, before we get to episode 50, we obviously have episode 49, which is what we're doing right now, and I'm super pumped to talk to you tonight about video games. Now, it's kind of a unique episode. Scott, my favorite and only co-host, is unable to join us this week. So he had some stuff come up, so Scott, we're definitely going to miss you this week. But I'm glad he's going to be missing episode 49 and not episode 50. I'd much rather have him for 50 for obvious reasons. So Scott, we're giving you a shout-out this week, buddy. We really are going to miss you on the show, but we're really happy and excited about episode 50 next week. Now, I actually have a special guest that I brought in this week for episode 49. He's not going to be on the entire episode, but he will be joining me in just a little bit for the modern portion, and that's our friend Dustin Vogler, also known as Vogue Nasty. So if you haven't checked his stuff out yet, make sure you do, and you're really going to enjoy him joining us for the modern portion in just a little bit. So up until that point, I will be doing a solo episode, so I'm going to do my very best to cover Scott in the retro section, and then we're going to jump into the modern section after that. So, I want to start off with reading some of the fan mail and comments sent in about episode 48. First of all, our good friend Jerry Terrifying wrote an email in response to us talking about the 3DO last week. And he said, just listening to the episode where you get the 3DO, please don't give away Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Slayer until you try it. It's one of the best games for the system. It's a first-person action game, and you actually pick a character or build one and then navigate randomly generated dungeons. And there's no real plot, just all action. Well, thanks for writing in, JT. And I love having JT as part of our podcasting community. First of all, you need to check out his stuff, mondocoolcast.com. And he does some really cool stuff. I personally enjoy the favorite thing that he does that I enjoy is the Mondo Cool TV. So make sure you check that out. You can watch all the episodes. I believe he's up to four. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I believe he's up to four. So you can check those out on MondoCoolcast.com. But thanks for writing in, JT. He always has great information about some obscure games that I haven't heard of. And we talked about one last week when Scott had bought me the 3DO. One of the games that came with it was the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Slayer. And I'm like, I'm probably going to give it away because I don't know anything about it, which I really am not going to give it away because I'm a retro collector. And he actually has played it, and he said it's a lot of fun. So thanks for writing in about that. And I'm definitely going to check that game out this week. And it does sound like a lot of fun. Also, we had our friend David write in. He commented on episode 49 and or episode 48. And just remember, for any of our listeners, you can comment on any of our episodes by going to classicleap.com and just clicking on add a comment. So there you go. But David has written in before, and he says you can actually get Knights of the Old Republic on Steam for $10. Just thought I'd point that out. So thanks so much for pointing that out, David. And he's responding to our deal of the week when we talked about Knights of the Old Republic on the Xbox. And yes, I actually wish I owned the game on Xbox, but I actually did buy it on Steam because I actually got it for $5 on a special one time. But now you can get it on their standard for $10. And I really like the PC version a lot as well, even though I'm not much of a PC gamer. But since it's an RPG, it's a little bit easier to play control-wise. But any of them, you know, like I have a crappy laptop from Walmart I bought maybe 6 months ago, and it's awesome because I can play Knights of the Old Republic on it and like beef up the graphics even though my laptop's crappy because it's kind of an older game, and so the game looks really good, and you can even play it on widescreen. So thanks for mentioning that you can get a good deal on it on Steam. But for those who like the physical copy and the console version, which I normally do, make sure you check out J2 Games because they still have the good deal up there that we mentioned last week for arguably one of the best RPGs on the original Xbox. So, sorry if I did miss any comments or any fan mail. Scott usually keeps up a little bit more on that stuff than I do, so thank you to everyone who wrote in, and hopefully I didn't miss anyone. So moving on from the fan mail, I just want to mention our sponsors like I like to every week. First of all, I want to mention AverMedia, one of my favorite sponsors that we have, and they've sent us the USB HD DVR. And I'm just really excited that to have them as one of the sponsors. It allows us to capture footage in high definition. And also want to thank Hapag for sending us the HD PVR. And they are also one of our sponsors, and they allow us to record our footage in HD as well with their device. Both of them are fantastic devices, even though they're competing companies, and we're privileged to have both of them as part of our show. I also want to mention Gamersgate. They work with Steam and by themselves, and in my mind offer the best in PC downloading, everything from retro and modern games on the PC. Make sure you check out gamersgate.com. As always, our favorite PR firm, Scenic 7, Carl over at Scenic 7, Triverse, does a fantastic job just getting the name out about Classic Elite and many of our other favorite shows. So thank you for always being awesome, Triverse, over at scenic7.com. And of course, we have to mention our buddy Jay from J2 Games, who gives us a 20% discount when we use the code CLEET at checkout, CL337 with J2 Games. And every week we have a deal of the week that we'd like to mention from J2 Games. And this week I have a little bit of the soccer mom coming out of me, and I know that sounds really weird, but I'm actually going to do one of the Wii exercise games as the deal of the week because it's a really good deal. And I've actually played the game before and gotten some good exercise out of it. So if you remember a couple years ago, EA Active released a workout game for the Wii called EA Active. And it's for all the sedentary listeners of the show. I'm mentioning this for you guys. To help you get your workout on after a 20-hour gaming session. But it's a really incredible deal. You can get EA Active, the box, and the manual, and the strap exercise bands for $5.99 on j2games.com. Now, you take the $5.99, you add a couple dollars shipping, but then you take 20% off of your total using the code CLEET, and you get a really, really good deal. For about $6, you get EA Active. Now, the cheapest online, I've seen it on eBay and on Amazon, is about $15, and that's before shipping. You add $3 or $4 shipping, you're looking at about $20 on Amazon and eBay, whereas if you buy it at j2games.com, you get it for $5.99. So maybe you think this is a big joke that I'm mentioning on the show, but you know what? Mother's Day's coming up before too long. If any of you kids out there have soccer moms that get a little chunky around the edges, maybe this would be a good gift for them. So go to j2games.com, buy EA Active for about $6. You got the Mother's Day present in the bag. So it's quite a deal. All right. Well, hopefully we still have listeners after the deal of the week portion. But I'm going to jump in. I'm going to take a stab at doing the retro portion on my own. Little nervous about it, don't want to let Scott down, but we'll see what I can do with the retro portion. So I want to start out this week, and I'm going to ask our listeners for some participation. And when I mean participation, I mean I'd like you to write in and leave some comments on episode 49, write in through email, classicleet@gmail.com, and I need your help answering a couple retro challenges. And so I'm going to present you with two challenges, and I'm just interested in hearing your responses. Scott and I will choose your responses and read them on episode 50, which is going to be a very big episode, if I haven't mentioned that at least 10 times already. So that's next week. We'll mention these on episode 50. You have a few days to write in and answer the retro challenges. The first challenge has to do with recording retro gameplay footage. Now, Scott and I ran into some issues this week when we wanted to record retro game footage into a digital format on our PC. The reason we ran into some challenges is because we didn't realize that most retro systems, such as Atari, NES, Sega Genesis, don't output video into 480i. Now, 480i is the standard format for most recorders, although there are some other ones, such as EasyCap, that seem to do it okay. But most retro systems only output video into 240p. At least that's from what I read online. Now, what are your suggestions to get our retro systems into 480i so we have better luck recording the gameplay footage for NES, Atari, Sega Genesis? I'm just interested in hearing your opinion. I've looked online. Looks like some people have modded their consoles in order to have an S-video output. But I don't know if that's something I want to do. I'd like to hear from some of our listeners and see if anyone has actually done that to give their systems a better video output. Plus, on a lot of modern-day LCD screens, like the ones I have, Scott has, the older systems just don't look very good on it. They have some bleeding issues and some other things. And so I'm wondering, is there any way to get our 240p output up to 480i to give us not only a little bit better picture on our LCD screens, but also a little bit more ease of use with recording retro video footage? So, I've seen some mods out there. Has anyone done one, is my first question. And the second question for our retro challenge is, what are some of the ways that you record your retro game footage? So, I would love to hear those things. Part of what I love about being in the podcasting gaming community is just learning from each other. So, write in with some of your strategies for this. And Scott and I will read, you know, maybe the top one or two on episode 50. Now, that's the first retro challenge. How do you record 240p or get your 240p game footage into 480i? The second retro challenge for this week is, I'm interested in finding out the places that you go to build up your retro collection. Now, the reason I bring this up is because, you know, Scott and I joke a lot about how we've kind of reversed roles a little bit. He started out as the retro person and is now playing some modern games. And I started out as the modern person and I'm now playing retro games. Now, I grew up playing retro games just like most of our listeners. So it's not like I'm doing it for the first time, but really rekindling my passion for retro games. And so I bring this up because I've been taking my collection more seriously lately, especially wanting to go out there and add things to my collection that I had as a kid, as well as add some things that I've never played before. And so I'm going to go everywhere that I can to find a great deal on retro stuff. Now, I already know about Craigslist and eBay and Amazon, but I'm talking about some of your local strategies. What do you do? So far for me, garage sales have been great. I mean, garage sales have been great for me. Finding retro systems. And recently I came across, and I can't think of the name of this girl, but she's one of my YouTube friends, and I have to look it up. But she lives in California, and she goes to tons of thrift stores. And she does like these thrift store game find videos on YouTube. So if I can find her channel again, I will link it. But I watched a few videos, and she just found tons and tons of great stuff at thrift stores. So I've actually been going to some of the local thrift shops, haven't found anything yet, but it's pretty cool, like going to thrift stores. That's just a neat idea. So I'm just interested in what are some of your strategies for finding and building your retro gaming collection. Where do you look? I'd love to hear about it. Write in, leave a comment, send us an email, and we will read the top one or two on episode 50. I'm sorry. So, those are the two retro challenges. This week in retro, I'm going to talk a little bit more about something I'm passionate about, and it has to do with returning to my roots. And so, in addition to the retro challenges, I want to talk some more this week about the Commodore 64. Mainly because there's the new Commodore 64 console coming out. Like, it looks just like the Commodore 64, but it's a modern day PC. And I've talked to you about it before, and I'll link it again on the show. But with all the talk of the new Commodore 64 coming out, maybe some of the Amigas coming out, it's just made me keep thinking about the Commodore 64. And if you've never played the Commodore 64, it's a computer from the 80s that's a mix of its own OS as well as a gaming machine. And this particular computer was very influential for me because most of my friends had an NES. I had a Commodore 64. I still had an NES later in its shelf life, but for me, it was a big part of gaming. At least for two and a half years, it's all I had for gaming. Now, we had purchased it from a neighbor, and I had 300 plus 5 1/4 floppies, as well as a fast load cartridge, 3 or 4 controllers, and I just totally loved the Commodore 64. Now, I've also mentioned on the show before that I lost the Commodore in a house fire when I was a freshman in high school, so I was super bummed about that and have been looking for one ever since. Last year at a garage sale, I found a as mint as it could be conditioned Commodore 64, full console, printer, monitor, keyboard, and 5 1/4 floppy drive. So I was really excited about that find. But since then, I've only fired it up once or twice because it's a collector's item and I know that it won't work forever and I want it to remain functioning. And it is fully functioning at this point. But other than wanting to do a video review of it in the future, I don't want to use it a lot. So I've been kind of having that desire to play some of the Commodore 64 games, but at the same time not have to use the actual Commodore 64. Just because I want it to last and I always want it to be fully functioning. So I actually went on searching, even though I don't love emulators, I went out searching for an emulator this week to emulate some of the games that I already had. And I found this amazing emulator and I just have to tell you about it. It's called the CCS64. And you can actually go to CCS64.com and it's developed by a person named Håkan Sundell. And I probably pronounced Håkan's name wrong, but Håkan Sundell has been working on this. I think he said he worked on it as part of his thesis in college and then just kept building on it and made it this really awesome emulator. It's almost completely fully functioning. It runs the Commodore OS. It has joystick input. And one of my favorite features, so I can review some Commodore games, is it doesn't enhance the games outside of their original state, but it allows for video and sound recording within the emulator. So it's just a brilliant feature. If you want to get some great Commodore gameplay footage, you can run it right within this system. So I'm actually going to start doing that for some of the reviews right inside the emulator. And this week, I have to tell you, I've been playing a ton of a few of my favorite Commodore games. Spy Hunter, if you remember the racing game Spy Hunter. Not really racing, but the car game, I guess I should say. Spy vs. Spy, which I've mentioned. If you've never played Spy vs. Spy, just a brilliant game. I absolutely love that game. It also, Summer Games, the Olympic Games was fun. And then Skate or Die, for some reason. I know a lot of people don't like Skate or Die, but I grew up playing it, and so I love Skate or Die. And so I've just been addicted to those games. And since most people were playing NES or had a PC by the time I had a Commodore 64, I've actually talked to a lot of gamers that although they've heard of the Commodore 64, they've never had one. And so I just want to encourage people to go to CCS64.com and check out the Commodore 64 emulator. I'm going to post a link to it. I think you're really, really going to like this emulator. You can purchase games online and then also download the ROMs of the games that you've purchased and give it a shot. I think you're really going to enjoy messing around with the Commodore 64. When you open the emulator, it pulls up the Commodore console and it looks just like you're firing up the Commodore. So this person, Håkan Sundell, did just a brilliant job with the emulator. So make sure you check that out this week. I think you're going to enjoy some of the retro games and the feel you have with this emulator. Also, for the retro portion this week, I wanted to talk about some big news from Square Enix. And Square Enix, as you know, has been doing role-playing games forever. Final Fantasy series, Chrono Trigger, several different other ones that are just brilliant, brilliant RPGs. And in the last couple of years, they've really done a lot of retro remakes, and they've made a lot that are heading to modern consoles. And so that's just kind of an announcement I have for the retro portion that I came across this week, is that they are releasing more retro games for the modern consoles. And this week I received in the mail to review Final Fantasy IV, the Complete Collection for PSP, which is the complete, I believe it's complete for the first time in the States, and arguably one of the best and has received the most acclamation. So I know that Final Fantasy VII also had, but supposedly Final Fantasy IV, I had never played it up to this point. Arguably one of the best in the series. So I'm excited to get into that one. I know Jeremy's going to be helping me with that review as well. But Final Fantasy IV, the Complete Collection. So it's cool that they're releasing those games. And it was also confirmed this week that Chrono Trigger, one of my favorites from the Super Nintendo, has been rated by the ESRB and will be making its way to the PS3 and the PSN sometime soon, even though there's no official release date yet. Now, I know a lot of people who listen to this show, including myself, love to have that physical cartridge in our hand for collector's reasons and also just because we like playing on the original consoles. But for a lot of young people that listen to the show, some of these 16-bit RPGs are treasures, and I think they should be able to play them. And so it's cool to see some of them released on, when some of these young gamers and new gamers don't have some of the older systems like we do. It's good that they can actually have a way to play some of these treasures. So for me, it's good news that Square's releasing these on the modern consoles because it gets them in more people's hands. And I think these are the types of games, especially Chrono Trigger, are the types of games that new gen and young gamers should check out and should play. So I was pretty excited about that news as far as the retro portion goes. Now, that does wrap up our retro portion for the week. Scott, I hope I did it some justice. I did the best I could. And I hope that you'll participate in our retro challenges this week as we head into the modern portion.
Hey, I'm Kevin.
And I'm Rooster.
From Paranerds.com. And you're listening to the Classic League podcast.
All right, well, as we continue on with episode 49, I have a little bit of a surprise for our listeners since Scott had to be out this week. I've asked our good friend Dustin Vogler, a big fan of the show and someone that we follow as well. He goes by Vogue Nasty for those of you who follow him on YouTube and online. I've asked him to come and be a part of the modern portion of episode 49. So welcome to the show, Dustin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on the show. We've been wanting to get you on for a while, so it kind of worked out fine, or kind of perfect this week that Scott was out so that you could be on the show with us. And I'm looking forward to you sharing the modern portion with me.
Yeah.
So you do a little bit of modern and retro gaming, correct?
Oh, yeah. I have all three modern consoles right now. So
that's awesome. So I don't consider the Wii a modern console, so I fight with Scott about that. But I consider it like a amped up GameCube, but no, I'm just kidding.
Two GameCubes duct taped together.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I do like the Wii though. I'm just joking around. But we're gonna start out this week, Dustin, with a little bit of a review portion. As we do, we try to do a review every week, and so I'm gonna talk about a game that I reviewed this week. I did a video review, and you can check out all of our video reviews on YouTube.com/ClassicLeet. But I did a video review of a couple games for Konami, and I want to talk about one that I've been wanting to play for a while and kind of following for a while, Hardcore Uprising. Have you heard of this one yet?
Yeah.
Okay, have you played it?
I haven't played it yet, but I think I've seen some videos on it.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is a PlayStation Network and Xbox Live Arcade release, and it's really what it is it's the latest in the Contra series. Okay. And so no one from Scott and I's generation or your generation for that fact could avoid Contra if you were a gamer.
Right.
I mean, most of us had at least seen it at one of our friends or played it. I mean, I probably beat Contra, the original Contra on NES, at least 50 times with friends. You know, I'd spend a night at one of their houses. We'd pull Contra out and just start playing Contra. So
yeah.
Did you play it a lot as a kid?
I did. I never got around to beating it. Oddly enough, I never had much patience for difficult games when I was a kid, but it's definitely one I want to finish now that I have more patience. So unfortunately, it kind of goes for expensive on eBay. Well, like $20.
Yeah, that's high because you can find retro consoles for that. So
yeah,
I always have trouble spending $20 on one game. But Scott is a beast. I mean, he has the video up of him beating it without the Konami code, which is just amazing because I always use that because it was more fun just to churn through the game with the code. So, but yeah, very challenging, very hard game. And Hardcore Uprising is the latest in the series. And in my mind, it brings some welcome changes. I'm just going to talk about a few of those. First of all, there's a graphical bump and a music bump as well. But the graphical bump is, it's really done in an anime style, which I don't always like. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of our listeners like that. But I really enjoyed the anime style of this. Just an overall graphical bump to the Contra series was kind of nice to see. And I believe it was done by the same people that it was Arc Systems Works, and they're the ones that do like Blaze Blue and those types of games. So definitely heavy on the anime style. Mm-hmm. And the story of the game is there's this agency trying to take over and oppress the human race, and you kind of play a band of characters in the future fighting against that. It carries all the similar things of a 2D action title, so it looks a lot like Contra as far as the gameplay. You jump right in, and the gameplay is very similar. Now, one of the things is that the game is still very hard. So like you said about difficult games, I mean, it's hard. I played a couple games online with people who were really good, and I would die, and they would keep going. And I'm just watching the screen going, how are they doing this? So I was kind of hoping Scott would have an opportunity to play the game because he was obviously really good at the first one. Probably the biggest changes you're going to realize come with the controls. In Contra, the original Contra, it felt like you could turn left to right and shoot both directions real quickly. Mm-hmm. In this game, it kind of feels like your characters, they're carrying like bigger guns, and it just feels like your characters are turning slower from left to right. So if like an enemy starts to approach you from behind, you actually have to time it to turn a little bit quicker than maybe you would before because your character turns slower, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you think that's maybe a result of the improved animation?
It could be, and that's something I guess I don't know tons about, like how the animation affects that. But it definitely is something where it's noticeable because it was kind of like when I put in that game and started playing, I'm like, okay, Contra, Contra, Contra. My mind goes to Contra right away because that's what I played a ton as a kid. And then I start to play this, I'm like, why is he turning so slow? Why, you know? And so trying to, you know, but what I realized is the more I played it, the easier it was to compensate for that, and it kind of became a normal part of the game. So I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing, but it's definitely a difference. And the other thing is that, you know, the double jump is still intact and it still works well. The game is just overall just a little bit slower than the original Contra, and there's also a couple more jumps that you can perform. So you can perform a jump where you jump straight up in the air, and then your character shoots parallel to the right or left. It's called like a slide jump or something like that. And so it's definitely, you know, there's just some more additions to get used to. And obviously, you know, you're playing on a modern console, not something that just has two buttons. So it just takes a little bit more to get used to.
Right.
I really like the one mode of the game called Rising Mode. And what it did was allow you to, even though it was still really hard, you could go and play through the levels. And if you died, you had an opportunity to level your character up and make them stronger.
Oh, that's cool.
And so you could actually go back and just kind of kick butt in the level that you couldn't before. So it kind of made you feel like you were working your way through the game, but you were actually able to get through the game. Whereas when you played the arcade mode, I mean, I'm dying left and right. Sometimes I can't get past the first stage. Sometimes but there also is online and local multiplayer. So I had a lot of fun jumping into online multiplayer with people who were good because it allowed me to get a lot further in the game than I probably would have done by myself. So I really like the changes. I like that you have that Contra feel and that it's kind of in the Contra bloodline or story. But I also understand in some of the reviews I've read, some things in some forums, gamers, a lot of hardcore and retro gamers were criticizing the game because they didn't like some of the subtle changes. And this is something I see a lot, and it's something I want to discuss with you in the modern, kind of leading into the modern portion this week.
Okay.
Do you feel like sometimes we hang on to the originals of something so much that we have trouble transitioning or accepting something new, especially in the gaming world?
Yeah, I think nostalgia plays a pretty big part in how much someone can enjoy something from the past. And it's a really – designers – it takes a really good designer to take a game that's old and change it in a way that the people that used to love it still love it. So I think, you know, a lot of those people that you read on the forums, that if they hadn't changed anything at all, then they probably would have been complaining about the fact that it was just the same old thing with up-res graphics.
Yeah.
So it just sometimes the nerd rage gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah, I think sometimes you have trouble. I mean, there's some people you just can't please. And
right.
But I even noticed that in myself. Like I was saying, you know, I almost had to pick the game up 3 or 4 times, like turn it off, you know, come back a day later, or a couple days later, and before it really started to grow on me. And I wonder sometimes, you know, like I had said, I picked it up, I'm like, okay, Contra, Contra, Contra. Like, I was just thinking it was going to be Contra. And mm-hmm. when it played a little bit differently and controlled a little bit differently, I felt myself, like, being disappointed right away and already starting to make judgments about the game. But if I wouldn't have continued to pick it up and continued to try it, I wouldn't have enjoyed the game as much as I ended up enjoying it, you know, and I mean, I'm still playing it now, you know, I'm still loving playing through the game and trying to get better at it. And so now it's this game that I'm really enjoying that I gave a high rating to on my review, but I feel like sometimes we give up on those things so fast. I mean, I remember when the new episode one of Sonic 4 came out, within the first day, people were already complaining, well, the music sucks, you know, and Scott and I talked about that some, but I think sometimes we hang on to that nostalgia so long that it's hard for us to see the good and the new.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, have you ever had, can you think of any games that you've played like a sequel or a new edition that you were really disappointed in or that you really loved?
Actually, I have pretty good examples of both. The new Castlevania, Lords of Shadow, I was pretty disappointed in, because I'm a huge fan of the older Castlevanias, and when, I don't know, just the fact that they started off brand new and tried to like reset the canon, that was when my own nerd rage got the better of me. And while it was a pretty good game, I couldn't accept it as a Castlevania. And on the other hand, one game that I really, really loved, it really exceeded all my expectations, was Metal Gear Solid 4. That game, I pretty much already said it, just exceeded everything that I was looking forward to.
And that game was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And, you know, it's funny you said that about the Castlevania game, because that was one of Scott's favorite modern games this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because he hadn't played much of the other ones. And mm-hmm. so, like, he even mentions that in his review, like, you know, I don't know anything about the canon or anything. And it actually hooked him on the series, you know. But yeah. I can understand, you know, coming from your perspective, playing all the other games and then having this one that tries to just kind of start over or reset the canon, that can be really frustrating, you know. But yeah. I think that's a valid frustration, you know, because...
Yeah.
You're really messing with the story and messing with the canon, you know, whereas something like this hardcore Uprising game and the Contra series, like, you know, you're just kind of adding on to something that doesn't have much of a story anyways, you know, definitely not as much of a story as Castlevania. But I think sometimes as gamers, we just need to kind of die to some of those things in nostalgia. Although nostalgia is a really good thing, we die to some of those things that prevent us from liking some new additions. So
yeah, especially with all the sequels that happen now, we'll just end up not liking anything if we stick to our guns too long.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and it happens all the time. So I just want to encourage our listeners to give some things a shot, and you might be surprised. I mean, I was definitely surprised that I liked Hardcore Uprising as much as I did, but I had to, you know, sacrifice a little bit. I had to pick it up 3 or 4 times before I started to like it. So
yeah.
Definitely something to think about heading into the modern portion. And another story this week is kind of a repetitive story, something we brought up last week. We talked about the Wii 2. now called Project Cafe, codenamed. And we talked a little bit about the announcement last week. And last week, the internet was kind of a buzz with the announcement of the Wii 2. What's going to happen with that? And this week, even more rumors and more speculation have come out. And so I just wanted to kind of update our listeners on some of the new things that have come out that somehow these big gaming news sites are getting a hold of this information, even though Nintendo's not commenting. So they're probably not too far off, but at this point, all of this is speculation. Mm-hmm. But they're saying that the new console could cost anywhere from $350 to $450. It might be released holiday season of this year, even, or spring of 2012. They're saying that 3D will probably be a function and that the processor is set to easily outperform the PS3, which sounds pretty awesome. Yeah. And probably the thing I'm most excited about, if there's any truth to it, is that they say the Wii 2 or Project Cafe will have the look of a modernized Super Nintendo.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I have no clue what that means. I mean, I love Super Nintendo, but I mean, it's obviously not going to be cartridge based. At least I hope Nintendo's not going to try to do that, you know. But you never know with Nintendo. So, but somehow it's going to look like a modernized version of the SNES. They're saying that, and have you heard about these controllers they're talking about that are going to have LCD screens built into them?
Oh, no, I hadn't heard anything about that.
Yeah, so they're saying that the Wii 2 is going to have, controllers that have these little LCD, like mini LCD screens built into them, which I have no clue how that's practical, but you never know what that's going to do. It's going to suck the first time you slam the controller down, especially if you need the LCD screen, which I don't do that, but I know a lot of people do.
How much are those things going to cost to replace? Or,
I don't know.
Just to get, you know, four to play local multiplayer in.
Yeah, that's what, that's one thing I hate about every time new consoles come out is everything is so expensive.
Yeah.
But they're actually saying the name of it could be Stream. Kind of like to think about streaming things to the controllers. So there's going to be obviously some sort of interface there if the LCD thing goes through. And so, Dustin, I wanted to ask you, Scott and I talked about this last week, so I wanted to get your opinion. What does Nintendo have to do right off the bat to begin competing again in the same market as Sony and Microsoft? Now, I know that Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo are already in the gaming market, but the last couple generations, Nintendo has chosen to take a different route.
Yeah.
With, you know, so they are competitors, but at the same time, they're not. They're heading towards different markets because Nintendo decided to go with its own niche with the last couple consoles.
Yeah.
So now it seems like they're heading back to saying, okay, we're going to try to take our place as king of the market. We're going to compete directly with Sony and Microsoft. We don't know if they have any surprises, which I'm assuming they do, but if they are going to go back into that competitive gaming market, what do they have to do to get off on the right foot?
Well, first thing that sprang to mind when you asked me was online. They have to get with the times as far as online goes. They got to drop friend codes and allow social networking and just streamline their online by all means.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I feel like Nintendo, even Sony in some ways have been behind a little bit on all the potential you can do with the online gaming market.
Yeah, if they would kill if they took all the good things from Xbox Live and then made it free. That'd be a good way to start getting some market share.
Oh, that would be huge. You know, I mean, that's one of the things I love about the PS3 is you can do most of the stuff for free. But at the same time, I just don't have a lot of PS3 people I play with online because everything seems like such a hassle to get it to work together.
Yeah.
You know, and Nintendo is just way out there, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they might as well just put a dial-up modem in the Wii because it just doesn't. I mean, their online just sucks. I mean, I remember it taking us like a half hour to get Mario Kart Wii set up with friends because you're like, okay, you got to call and get this, you know, 30-digit friend code from them, yeah. And then they got to get ours, and then we have to communicate, and it's just like, oh, man, what a hassle.
I mean, it kind of makes sense for the Wii because it's primarily a child's system, so to avoid, you know, any kind of stranger danger situations on the Wii, I understand that it has to be somewhat cumbersome, but if they put out a new fancy console, then they can't do that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's probably the biggest thing they need to do to get off on the right foot. And I mentioned to Scott last week, I would love to see their their IPs or their things that they own, like the Zelda, the Metroids, the Marios. I would love to see all that stuff become mature. You know?
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it has to be violent and cussing and all this stuff, but just become like in the next generation. It seems like we've been waiting forever for Zelda to not be a cartoon, you know, and all that stuff. So like getting them into the modern market and getting them into modern gaming. And I'm really excited to see some of their IPs just get into, you know, like how cool would that be to have, you know, a Zelda game that was just blown up, you know?
Yeah.
I think it would be neat. So
I would love a Zelda game with a different storyline. That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be. Yes. So
one other thing I wanted to comment on was I found it odd that it would incorporate such a powerful, such powerful hardware that it would be able to outdo the PS3, because I never really think of Nintendo IPs as being graphically intensive. Like you think of like a Gears or Metal Gear, those are pretty graphically intensive, whereas, you know, Super Mario Galaxy, while it wasn't graphically superior in any way, the gameplay was still there, and it's a little weird that they would go with something that powerful. I'm interested in seeing what they do with it.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. It looks like it's going to be, or at least it sounds like from all the speculation, it's going to be awesome. So thanks for giving your input on that, and it'll be interesting to see if they can pull it off. So heading into one last piece of news here for the modern portion, it was reported today that the PlayStation Network was down for a bit because of an external intrusion, and that's all Sony is saying. And Scott and I talked about this a few weeks ago with Sony pulling that big news story about the guy hacking the PS3 and them just being like frustrated and cracking down and, you know, monitoring people's accounts, and all those things are okay for Sony to do. I don't like hacking, but it's exactly what I feared, because anytime a company comes and attacks a hacker and makes this big public scene about it, it really draws more attention from other hackers. And so, and then some idiot from the company makes a statement like, well, now we're unhackable. And translation means sucker. You know, just wait a minute, because we're going to break in. Yeah. And now they have this whole group called Anonymous formed strictly to hack the PS3. So they're just wide open for attacks right now. So don't be a hacker if you're out there listening. But at the same time, gaming companies, don't be idiots. I mean, who knows what this external intrusion is, but it's just, I just think we're going to be seeing this in the news for quite some time. I mean, yeah. Interesting stuff.
To anybody who was, you know, cheering or encouraging Anonymous or Geohot at any time, this is what it leads to right here, is you got people who, you know, want to do something kind of stupid, and then everybody else who bought a PS3 or subscribed to PSN Plus is, they're, you know, wasting their money now because they can't even play online. So
yeah, it's frustrating. And the whole hacking thing is, you know, it's like a game, you know, it's like Crysis 2 when it was leaked 3 weeks before it was released or whatever. It's just like, this is frustrating to me. So anyways, don't be a hacker. Plain and simple, kids. Should have been at the end of a G.I. Joe episode. So now is a special time of the modern portion this week in episode 49. It's called Vogue Nasty Time. That's what I'm calling it. But since we have Dustin on, I just wanted to ask you some questions.
Right on.
All right, so tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your gaming background? How long have you been gaming?
Oh, well, I've been thinking about it recently, and my earliest memory is I was playing Defender on the Atari 2600 at my grandmother's house. I think that's like the earliest thing I can remember. And I still remember to this day when we first, very first got our Nintendo. I was sitting in my living room at home, and I realized that my dad had left, and I asked my mom about it, and she's like, "Oh yeah, he went out to the store for something." And when he came back, he was walking in, and he was carrying a blue bag. I thought that was very strange. And of course, when he got in, it was an NES, and we spent the rest of the day playing Super Mario.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
And I've been playing video games ever since. It's kind of hard to imagine now because everyone's so well informed with the internet. When we didn't have internet back then, so honestly, I didn't even know the NES existed until my dad brought it home. And so after that, I was actually one of the rare kids that actually got themselves a TurboGrafx-16.
Oh, wow. Do you still
Yeah,
have it?
not the exact one, but I do own the system.
That's really cool.
I asked my folks for a game for my birthday or Christmas, and instead they bought a TurboGrafx and a bunch of games for that, because I think it may have been around the time that the TurboGrafx had come down in price because it wasn't selling, so they just got that in a bunch of games, and it's probably like on clearance or something.
Yeah, that's cool. So obviously you're a collector. I mean, if you watch any of Vogue Nasty's YouTube videos, you see the shelves in the background with tons of games and systems and all that stuff. So tell us about one or two things that's in your collection that are real special to you and why.
Right, let's see. I think that one of my most favorite things that I own is the Turbo Duo, which
Okay.
is it's essentially like the TurboGrafx-16 came out, and then they came out with a CD attachment, which is pretty comparable to like a Sega CD,
Yeah.
where it attaches onto the back of your system. And later, NEC, which later changed to TurboTech Incorporated, they put out the Turbo Duo, which was the Turbo CD and the Turbo Graphics mixed together. So it's just one system. And I love it because I really wasn't aware of it until a few years ago. And on top of that, one of the best Castlevania games that exists came out in Japan for that system. So I think it was a couple of years ago, I bought myself one for my birthday, and a copy of Rondo of Blood, and that was a really good summer because I just sat around and played Castlevania.
That's really awesome, and that's a pretty rare console, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty. It's kind of rare. Yeah, it won't cost you like $1,000, but you don't come across them very often.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So what games are you playing right now, or what's something that's just kind of keeping you occupied as far as a game goes right now?
Right now I've got pretty much two things on my plate. I'm trying to play through Crysis, the first one, not the second one.
Okay.
I've owned the first one for a while, and since the sequel came out, I thought I'd go ahead and play through it in case I wanted to try the sequel out. And it's oh man, the game is good, but I just hate PC gaming because
Oh, I do too, man.
it's
And I've
just a
tried
pain.
Crysis 1. I actually own it, and I've tried it, and like I don't invest a lot of money into my PC, but it's frustrating for me too because I can never run it at a good frame rate, and that game was so intensive for PC, and yeah, so I feel that, but yeah, so you're just kind of trudging through it.
Yeah, it's I got really close to the end, and my my game crashed right as I hit the save button, and it corrupted the file, and then the game wouldn't load, and so I had to like uninstall and then reinstall, and so it's just been a real pain. I don't know how much farther I'm going to go in it. I think I've seen pretty much the whole game. Yeah. I might just watch the ending on YouTube.
That's a good call. Good call. So Crysis 2 is definitely one I want to check out for a console. I just haven't picked it up yet. So
yeah.
Well, that's really cool. And thanks for sharing some of that information with us here. Like I said, it's really good to have you on the show. Yeah. Where can our listeners go to hear more about you? What's your YouTube address? And you know, where else are you present on the web?
Let's see. I'm on YouTube at youtube.com/user/DustinVogler. That's DustinVogler. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter name is Vogue Nasty. I'm on Facebook at Vogue Nasty, which I actually later we'll talk about my marathon. I actually created an event on Facebook for anyone who wants to get an invite. And what else? I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. Well, go ahead and tell us. That was the last thing I was going to close the episode out with, is just tell us real quick about your gaming marathon and how our listeners can get involved. I know Scott and I announced it last week, but let's hear it from you.
All right. My church, Victorious Life Church in High Point, North Carolina, they are having some difficulties with the roof over the children's area where they are taught their Sunday school classes. And, well, I say they're having problems, but really the roof is falling apart and rain leaks through, and there's rain that has damaged some of the ceiling tiles. It's, you know, they're molding and mildewing, and there's actually rain coming into the walls to the point that it's actually starting to kind of make the paint chip with the stuff growing underneath it. And they've tried several times to, you know, patch and repair it, and it's got to the point that they simply need to replace it. And it's going to cost $60,000 to replace. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to play video games for 24 hours and stream it live over the internet. Hopefully I will be able to not only have a camera on myself showing you that I'm playing the games, but also hopefully I can use my capture card to stream the game that I'm actually playing. And because of that, it may limit it to retro video games, because my PS3 only uses HDMI.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put that over Ustream, and I also have a donation page set up on Chip-In. So if anyone wants to make a donation, it would be much appreciated. It doesn't, you know, whatever you can, just if you want to clean out the coins of your couch or in the console of your car, any little bit helps. So,
well, that's cool, man. And we'll link the Chip-In page, and then also your YouTube page, so our listeners can get a hold of you and talk to you about that. And that's awesome. I think that's really cool. Scott and I are big on anyone that wants to help out, make people's lives better, I think is an important cause. I know I'm really big on that. And so I'm excited to watch some of your Ustream and also donate some to that as well. So what's the, did you tell us the dates?
It will be on May 14th. I'll start at 8 a.m. and play until May 15th, 8 a.m.
That's awesome, man. So make sure you check that out, and you can watch Ustream and just, can we do request of what games we want to see?
Absolutely. Right. Also, I just want to mention that I think for Ustream, if you want to like type in like requests or leave messages, you may have to sign up for it. It's free, and you know, it might require like a email address or something, but just a forewarning.
Cool, man. Well, hopefully most of our listeners will check that out. And we'll be sure to mention that as well on episode 50 of the podcast.
Right on.
So thank you so much, Dustin, for being on the show. It's good to have Vogue Nasty with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's fun and it's cool that we've gotten a chance to meet you from doing the podcast. You're one of the many great people we've gotten to meet and part of the community that's developed. And so it's just been really fun, meeting people like you. So it's good stuff.
Yeah.
And that's going to wrap it up for episode 49, kind of a special episode leading up to a more special episode, 50 next week. Scott and I have a lot of surprises planned, and so I hope you'll tune in and listen to episode 50. As always, you can check us out at www.classicelite.com. That's classicl337.com. You can check us out on YouTube, our review channel, youtube.com/classicelite. And you can email us separately, tony@classicleak.com, scott@classicleak.com, or just in the general mailbox, classicleak@gmail.com. And I'm sure you've heard enough of the words classic and leak together in a minute. So there you go. Enjoy your week, everyone, and we will see you for episode 50.